Well, we're just about to begin our study for today, which is September 13th, 2023, 21:03 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you. The light from the heater. There we go. I can block that. We are in our article, Born and Raised. No. Not born and raised. We are still in the born and raised article, by the way. We haven't continued it yet. But we are in the Ark of Urartu article, chapter 1, paragraph 6. The Hebrew word, quote, NSR, end quote, because there are no vowels in the ancient Abjad languages. So the Hebrew word NSR means eagle or vulture. Or plank. Plank, like a wood plank. The Gilgamesh epic said that the ark ended on Mount Nisir, or Nisir. Thus, from the description of the mountain as an eagle and also as a plank, we see that the ark landed high up on it, on the mountain. The height being represented by the eagle and the plank, more or less representing the ark. It is only logical that the town of Uzengili, where Noah's ark now remains, is known as Nazar. Compare that with Nisir, or Nisir. Or NSR. For that was the former name of Uzengili before 1948 CE. Dogubiyazit is estimated to be 12 miles or 19 kilometers northwest, and Kazan about 15 miles, 24 kilometers northwest of Noah's Ark. Dogubiyazit, and Kazan. The Ark site itself is quite close to the border with Iran to the south, and the border tower is visible on the hill. If a plane crashes, this is an old joke, if a plane crashes on the border between two countries, where do they bury the survivors? So is the old saying, nowhere. You don't bury survivors. Noah's Ark is impaled on a rock outcropping there at Nazar, now Uzengili, caught there on the mountain in a mudflow. The place of first descent is higher up the slope before a face called in the Epic of Gilgamesh, quote, the wall of heaven, end quote. Here, a sheer rock face crowns the summit on the northwest side, rising some 300 feet as the diadem, known as Mashu. The word Mashu is the same word as MSH in Hebrew, with vowels removed and becomes Moshi, drawn out of water. In Akkadian, Mashu means twins, and it is the name of the first pitched camp at the place of first descent to the summit of Mount Nisir, or Nisir, or Nisir. So that is that the first descent would be from the water, landing on the, from the waters of the deluge with Noah and his family, landing on the summit of the mountain. And that's the first pitched camp when they landed. Truly, Misha, it's called, of Genesis 10 and 30. Curious, because there we have the MSH again, Misha. Let's look at Genesis 10 and 30 just for one moment. Ignore what we're looking at otherwise. Genesis 10, 30. And their place of dwelling came to extend, talking about the descendants of Noah. Their place of dwelling came to extend from Misha as far as Sephar, the mountainous region of the east. So Misha is mentioned there. Very consistent word, since the vowels are not considered to be important in the ancient languages. Misha is the same name as the name of Moses, but it's also the same name as Mashu, which we saw was the first pitched camp after the landing, or the first descent, place of first descent, as it's called, the landing of the Ark, Noah's Ark, on the Mount Nizir. Uzengili is also known as Mazar, or Majar. Compare with Mashu. So that's an absolutely astonishing, remarkable set of circumstances and the also the linguistics that are evident there have a great deal of simplicity and understanding. What's the word? Ease of simplicity, logic, and innocence to them. So these words appear to be true. There's nothing to believe otherwise in these words. It's remarkable that we have this history of the landing of the Ark on this mountain with the incredible crown at the top of the mountain, the crown-shaped cliff, all of these things that are also written about in the ancient writings, such as the Epic of Gilgamesh, for example. Our proverb for today, little ones, is from Ecclesiastes 10:9. He that is quarrying out stones will hurt himself with them. He that is splitting logs will have to be careful with them. Joshua chapter 1. We finished the five books of Moses. We're up to the point where we can begin the first chapter of the book of Joshua. Joshua chapter 1, little children. And it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of Jehovah, that Jehovah proceeded to say to Joshua, the son of Nun, the minister of Moses. We know he was called Hoshea as well. Jehovah said, Moses, my servant, is dead. And now get up, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I am giving to them, to the sons of Israel. Every place upon which the sole of your foot will tread, to you, people, I shall certainly give it, just as I promised to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon to the great river, the river Euphrates, that is, all the land of the Hittites, and to the great sea toward the setting of the sun, which is the Mediterranean, your territory will prove to be. Nobody will take a firm stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I proved to be with Moses, I shall prove to be with you. I shall neither desert you nor leave you entirely. Be courageous and strong, for you are the one who will cause this people to inherit the land that I swore to their forefathers to give to them. Only be courageous and very strong to take care to do according to all the law that Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn aside from it to the right or to the left, in order that you may act wisely everywhere you go. This book of the law should not depart from your mouth, and you must, in an undertone, read in it day and night, in order that you may take care to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way successful, and then you will act wisely. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and strong. Do not suffer shock or be terrified, for Jehovah your God is with you wherever you go. And Joshua proceeded to command the officers of the people, saying, pass through the midst of the camp and command the people, saying, get provisions ready for yourselves, because 3 days from now you are crossing this Jordan to go in and take possession of the land that Jehovah your God is giving you to take possession of it. And to the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, let there be a remembering of the word that Moses, the servant of Jehovah, commanded you, saying, Jehovah your God is giving you rest and has given you this land. Your wives, your little ones, and your livestock will dwell in the land that Moses has given you on this side of the Jordan, but you men will pass over in battle formation before your brothers, all the valiant mighty men, and you must help them, first when Jehovah gives rest to your brothers, the same as to you, and they also have taken possession of the land that Jehovah your God is giving them, you must also return to the land of your holding and take possession of it, the one that Moses, the servant of Jehovah, has given you on the side of the Jordan toward the rising of the sun. Accordingly, they answered Joshua, saying, all that you have commanded us, we shall do. And wherever you may send us, we shall go. As we listened to Moses in everything, so we shall listen to you. Only may Jehovah your God prove to be with you just as he proved to be with Moses. Any man that behaves rebelliously against your order and does not listen to your words in all that you may command him will be put to death. Only be courageous and strong. And that's the end of Joshua chapter 1. Now, in case someone is not in a position to know about it, the side of the Jordan toward the setting of the sun is the west side, where the Mediterranean borders, or is the border of the land of the Promised Land, which was later known as the land of Israel, but also the land or the side of the Jordan toward the rising of the sun is the east side, because the sun rises in the east and it sets in the west. So that's the basic understanding of those things for people who have not yet had an opportunity to learn that, perhaps for the younger ones, for example. Our next reading is from the book of Revelation. And what do we have? Chapter 20. John, once again, who is being given a vision in heaven from the Lord Jesus Christ. John writes, and I saw an angel coming down out of heaven with the key of the abyss and a great chain in his hand. And he seized the dragon, the original serpent, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And he hurled him into the abyss and shut it and sealed it over him, that he might not mislead the nations any more until the 1,000 years were ended. After these things, he must be let loose for a little while. And I saw thrones, and there were those who sat down on them, and power of judging was given them. Yes, I saw the souls of those executed with the axe for the witness they bore to Jesus and for speaking about God. And those who had worshipped neither the wild beast nor its image, and who had not received the mark upon their forehead and upon their hand. And they came to life and ruled as kings with the Christ for 1,000 years. In brackets, the rest of the dead did not come to life until the 1,000 years were ended. End bracket. This is the first resurrection, that is, the rulers who rule with Christ for 1,000 years. Happy and holy is anyone having part in the first resurrection. Over these, the second death has no authority, but they will be priests of God and of the Christ, and will rule as kings with him for 1,000 years. Now, as soon as 1,000 years have been ended, Satan will be let loose out of his prison, and he will go about to mislead those nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together for the war. The number of these is as the sand of the sea. And they advanced over the breadth of the earth and encircled the camp of the holy ones and the beloved city. But fire came down out of heaven and devoured them. And the devil who was misleading them was hurled into the lake of fire and sulfur, where both the wild beast and the false prophet already were, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. So that's the final, after the devil was released for a while, that's the final annihilation, the end of the devil. And I saw a great white throne and the one seated on it. From before him the earth and the heaven fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne, and scrolls were opened. But another scroll was opened. It is the scroll of life. And the dead were judged out of those things written in the scrolls according to their deeds. And the sea gave up those dead in it, and death and Hades gave up those dead in them, and they were judged individually according to their deeds. And death and Hades were hurled into the lake of fire. So death itself was done away with. This means the second death, the lake of fire. Furthermore, whoever was not found written in the book of life was hurled into the lake of fire. Whoever was not found written in the book of life was hurled into the lake of fire. That's the end of Revelation chapter 20. We've used about half of our time, roughly. So it was a very short study today. Perhaps we can go back and look at the article again. It's such an interesting article. We need to keep reading it and rereading it to try to absorb all the information. So here's the wall of heaven in Yüzyıl, Turkey, in the picture, with a beautiful, verdant landscape below the mountain. And we know just in front of this portion of the landscape is where the ark is situated, from the other photos we've looked at, or from this photo as well as the next one. And this is taken from the northwest side looking southeast, something that I had determined from my study, that this is looking from the northwest side toward the southeast. So that means, that would mean that its south would be pointing to the right, and let's see now, yeah, that's right, and that north would be coming out of the page to the left diagonally. But that's just provided that this description is correct, from the northwest side looking southeast. I did a lot of work in my determination of all these facts that I could possibly learn from this set of pictures, and from all the evidence that I could gather about the Ark site and the Ark itself. The wall of heaven in this other picture, right, Mount Judy in the right background, of this picture. See, the wall of heaven is this cliff, and then Mount Judy would be this more or less normal mountain with a more gradual incline rather than a steep cliff. Now, this is quite remarkable. We have these pictures. These are real pictures, as far as I can ascertain. This is really what the Ark site looks like. That's really Noah's Ark. That's the way it's actually lying in the landscape. That's its relation with regard to the nearness and the direction relative to the Mount Judy and the Wall of Heaven. It's just, I was so excited when I wrote this article, I could hardly contain myself, and yet I knew that I had to remain focused on writing and ascertaining the correct details. I had no other way of making an article which would be of any value unless I focused on what I needed to do to get the correct facts. So I didn't have time to really sit and enjoy it. Didn't have the time, but I was just so thrilled while I was writing that it was really hard to contain myself, and I suppose now is the time when I do have an opportunity, everyone does, but myself included, to enjoy this, to enjoy the discovery. And this was done in, well, the picture was taken by the Turkish military. The photographer of which organization was the one who first discovered the Ark in the landscape. And the picture that he took was, we're not actually certain when, because he may have looked at the pictures a year or so later. And so the picture may have been taken, and he didn't look at them for some time. But here's the picture that he took. The Turkish military surveillance or reconnaissance photo that shows that there's this shape in the landscape that looks like an ark. I mean, a boat. He wouldn't have thought of the ark, I don't think. He would have just thought that's a boat, a ship, in the landscape. And, of course, it was an old ship because it was embedded in the landscape and it looked like part of the landscape. So it was of great interest to some people, just for that reason. But it was taken, this photo, perhaps in 1958 or 1959, while the plane was flying over doing its reconnaissance. Now, they do these reconnaissance flights for whatever reasons the military do those things. It may have been for defensive reasons, to find out what is really happening in the countries in case there are any invaders and things like that. We don't know the reason why they took the photo, but there they found this shape of a boat, and it turned out it actually measures the correct exact length within a few, you know, whatever, a few feet or inches or whatever it is. It's not much different from the actual dimension of length given in the Bible for Noah's Ark, in the Bible itself. But we translate, for example, we took the value of the Babylonian cubit, right? We took that as whatever it was. We did that calculation up here. There it is, 21 inches. The great Babylonian cubit. Now, if some people, a normal man has an arm, the cubit is the distance from the tip of the fingers to the end of the forearm or the elbow, at the elbow. So that it's normally 18 inches in people of today's size who live in North America, for example. 18 inches is a cubit. But in Babylonia, in ancient times, perhaps there were different size cubits based on different size men for some reason. And there was what is called a great Babylonian cubit of 21 inches, so it's a little longer than 18 inches. And if I recall, there's an Egyptian cubit too, if I'm not mistaken. Let's look for that. Let's do a search. Okay. Cubit. Here's the Babylonian cubit. No, David Fassold measured the length of the ark as 6,180 inches long. That is the actual ark in Turkey. And with the inch being a standard measure used in the Great Pyramid, that's another thing. The inch was actually a standard unit. And it was used in the Great Pyramid. Which means that the number 6,180 becomes significant for the reason that it is a phi number, quote unquote phi. Phi is a number that occurs in nature, such as a number in mathematics that is used to explain the curvature of the spiral, for example, in certain seashells and things. You know, it's a natural number. A number found in nature when analyzing the shape of certain creatures such as seashells, you know, or creatures who create seashells, and their place of abode, which is the shell, is the thing that has these spirals contained within them. Now the thing is, the other phi numbers or 1.618 and 2.618. We see 0.618 is a phi number. So 6180 is a phi number because it's basically just the decimal place is four places to the right of where it would be if it were 0.618. So it's quite remarkable in that way. Now the characteristic of phi, one of the characteristics of phi is that if I divide, this is a remarkable thing about phi. If I divide 1, you can do this on your calculator, 1 divided by 0.618, and what do I get? I get 1.618. See, that is the remarkable property of the number phi, or any of the phi numbers. 1 divided by 0.618 equals 1.618. There are no other numbers that do that. It's quite fascinating. So if we add another 1 to the 1.618, we get 2.618, and so on. But the properties of this phi number would be something that mathematicians study, and we can study it. I'm not attempting to do that right now because I haven't prepared this. So let me see. How do we get? What happens with? Okay. Yeah, 1.618 squared is 2.618. Or it's actually 2.6179, but it's very close to 2.618. So you see, these phi numbers have these interesting properties, this group of properties that are unique, but also they exist in nature and have been used to describe the shape of spirals and things in nature. And, well, we'll see in the article more about it. When the width of the ark given in the Bible is taken as a quotient of the beam maximum, or the beam width, rather, which is the beam, it's the maximum width of the boat. And when we divide that by 1.618, the maximum width is determined to be 138.88 feet. Now, this equation is used to calculate that. B is the beam or maximum width of the vessel. 50 is the ark's width in cubits from Genesis 6, verse 15. 20.6, that is the number of inches in an Egyptian cubit. That's right, so 21 inches was a great Babylonian cubit, and 20.6 inches is the Egyptian cubit. 12 is the number of inches in a foot. And 1 plus the square root of 5 in brackets divided by 2 is a precise representation of phi. So if I put a bracket and I say 1 plus square root of 5 and then end the bracket and then divide by 2 and say equals, that will give me a precise representation of phi. And it's 1.618033989. And probably more beyond that, but it's approximately 1.618. But when you use these things, so this is 50, the arc's width from Genesis, times the inches, which would give us the arc's width in inches. If we multiply the number of cubits by the number of inches in a cubit, in the Egyptian cubit, which is 20.6, and then we divide by 12 to get it into feet, right? And so that's the number of feet. And then when we multiply by the number of phi, which is 1.618, which is what we have to do, because if the area of the arc is to remain the same, the beam width must be wider than the width of a box-like shape of the same area, you see, because the ship tapers at both ends. So in order for the area to be just as large as the box-shaped representation, or, you know, visualization, rather, of the arc, if it's in a box, which is like a rectangle, it has a constant width. In order for that area to be the same as the one where it's shaped like a ship, the beam width must be greater than the width of the box, you know, so there can be more area in, you know, to make up for where the shape of the ship tapers down and there's less area. So altogether it's the same area when we multiply by phi, and we get 138.88 feet is the beam width. And that's it for today, I think. But we can talk about the length of the Egyptian cubit and so on later. This is amazing. I had to do a lot of research to find any of this, because this is very fairly obsolete and obscure information. But it is known. There's so many other things to talk about. That was from Chapter 1, Paragraph 9, the information about how to calculate the beam width of the ship, which we know as the Ark. Okay, so for now, it's September 13th, 2023, and the time is 21:36 hours. Is that true? Yes. I'm Ward Green. I hope you have had a wonderful day. In whatever way you've tried, then Jehovah will appreciate that. I love you. I hope you will continue on your studies in some way. And this is now time to say goodbye. So in my behalf, this is Crow and Cassie saying bye for now.